how you doing? Zach Cassie.
M.H. Mahoney.
Peyton Prince.
Father Jones.
Adam Henry.
T.J. Laramie, and you're listening to Windy City Sports.
Yo, what's good? My name is Drake DeMore, and you're listening to Wind City Sports, Windsor's only local sports radio program and podcast on CJAM 99.1 FM, where we are now reaching higher ground in Windsor and Detroit. New episodes of Wind City Sports drop here on CJAM every Thursday, live at 8 p.m., and replays on Mondays at 12 noon p.m. You can hear all of our old shows on SoundCloud, iTunes, and wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and much more. We'll talk all about that at the end of the show, as we normally do. Today is Thursday, May 24th, 2018, and it is episode 97 of Wind City Sports. This week on Wind City Sports, we're talking to former Windsor Spitfire, former NHLer, now turned coach, Eric Wellwood. Eric is straight out of Windsor, Ontario, better yet, Oldcastle, Ontario, along with his brother Kyle, who also was in the NHL and Windsor Spitfire himself. Back in the barn days. We talked to Eric about his playing career, playing for the Spitfires, and then moving on to the AHL and NHL, until eventually transitioning into a coaching career. We'll talk about why he got into coaching and how he ended up here, back in Windsor with the Lancers. He'll be starting as the assistant coach this September. Normally now would be the time that we hear a PSA from CJAM, things that keep us alive to keep doing what we do, like Wind City Sports and all of our other spoken word-based programs and music-based programs. But here on the podcast, we're going to skip that and get right into the interview right now with former Windsor Spitfire, Eric Wellwood. So here we go. First off, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. And I've always been a fan of yourself and your brother. So,
thanks.
Yeah, it's cool to be able to talk to you. Obviously, you're Windsor guys, so... I always thought like you were one of those Windsor guys that actually made it to their hometown team with the Spits. So
yeah, exactly.
Let's kick off there. Right. You know, how did you get on that team? How did you get recruited? Do you remember anything about that?
Well, locally playing AAA hockey, mm-hmm. For Sun County Panthers. And then I was able to get drafted, in the fourth round of the OHL draft. And I, played half the year with the Company Chiefs at that time. And then I think once the Spits were eliminated from playoffs, that's when they called me up, mm-hmm. so I can get some playing time in the OHL before the next season starts.
Was it always a dream to be able to play with the Spits?
I think when you grow up, I wouldn't say it was like a dream, like playing the NHL type of dream, but
of course, yeah.
It's definitely something that you hoped for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a local kid and having
exactly.
fortunate that my brother got to play for the team as well, you know, and then being drafted by them and having the ability to play for them it's definitely something sentimental towards it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's something immediate that you can reach to, you know, like you said, it's not like NHL is a big goal, but it's like something that you'd want to do. Like I said, like you can't always just be drafted to your hometown team, right? So it's kind of,
exactly.
Yeah. So it's cool that you were able to do that. And started there back in 2006. So you're able to play at the barn a little bit as well. Is that something you always wanted to do?
Yeah, there was some nostalgia around that rink, I think, especially when you're growing up and watching the Spits games there. You just want the ability to play in that rink in an OHL game. I remember a couple of times in the AAA, we got to play there, and there was always something about that arena where you felt like you were playing back in time, even though it was current affairs. So, mm-hmm. It was definitely something where I cherish that I had the ability and opportunity to play at that rink.
Yeah, well, the barn's like a Windsor sentimental thing, right? So everyone just loved that place. So to be able to actually play for the Spits there, that's pretty, it's Windsor big.
Exactly.
And obviously then you made a transition into the WFCU, a beautiful place, but just that nostalgia of the barn that everyone loved.
It's a true junior rink.
Exactly. It was awesome. But so did it take some time to getting used to playing in the O, or did you kind of jump into it pretty swiftly?
No, I think from my own experience, I had a very difficult time making that transition.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, when you grow up and you've always been the best player and you've always been granted the ice time, and then now it's the first time in your life that you have to deal with playing with players that are better than you and taking on a different role than you're used to. I think it took me, you know, definitely two full years in the OHL before I felt comfortable enough where I could start making an impact on the game.
Yeah, because eventually you grew into a good spot with the team. Obviously, by the time you were in your last year, you guys won their first Memorial Cup. So what do you remember about that road to Brandon?
First cup was for us was Rimouski. That was the time where we were. I don't know if we were, necessarily planning on winning in the sense for the management side. I think that they were ultimately trying to build the team for our second run, and we just so happened to gel so well in the dressing room from 2006, and we just grew together as a group. I think that. Us growing together is what pushed us in Rimouski to win the Memorial Cup. In that year, we were down 0-2 to start the round robin, and no team in the history of the Memorial Cup has come back and ended up winning the Memorial Cup. And we've been through adversity as a group when we had a tragic event of losing Mickey Reno as our captain. And I think when you have those events, as tragic as they are, they also bring you guys together as a group more than any adversity that you can really go through. So anytime as a group that we did face adversity, like in Brandon, I wouldn't say it was easy, but it was definitely something that we've been through in the sense of the emotional and mental aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You guys made a huge positive out of an even bigger negative.
Exactly.
Yeah. So weighing in that obviously the tragic Mickey Reno situation, playing for your hometown team, and then the kind of Cinderella story out there in Rimouski, was your junior career something that is very memorable to you and that you cherish?
I could say now that I've had a lot of it's almost 10 years to reflect on that time period of my life, it's arguably the best time of my life so far. The friendships that I was able to create there so far have been lasting. For instance, Mark Kandari, he's getting married this year. I'm going up to his wedding. Justin Shugg's getting married this year as well. I'm going to his wedding. Greg Nemus is getting married next year. I'm standing in his wedding. So there's these bonds that I was able to forge through that experience that, it obviously changed my life during that time, but has had a great impact on my friendships to this day.
It's cool to hear, man, because that time with the Spits, that was very influential on the city, yet alone just the organization of the Windsor Spitfires. It was a recession time, obviously, like we mentioned, Mickey Reno, and that whole team just uplifted the city. So it's always cool to catch up with you guys. I got to talk to Mark Kandari a few weeks ago and Craig Donick and some guys like that. So it's cool to see that you guys are all kind of still buddies.
Yeah. And I think I always remember Bob Buechner, emphasizing that this is the greatest time of your life. These are the friendships that you'll have. And when you're going through that, it's not that we played off like whatever. It was like you did understand the magnitude of the situation we were in. But at the same time, when it does come to fruition, when Boogie was telling us that like, these are the friendships that are going to last, and he was bang on in that sense where, the bond that we created as a group going through the adversity that we had to go through is stuff that, again, I've carried through my life, and I hope that it sticks with me the rest of my life.
That's awesome, dude. Did you play in that alumni game last year, too?
Yeah.
So what was it like to reconnect with some guys maybe you haven't seen in a while and just kind of have some fun with them, eh?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just more of a reminiscence, like, and everybody comes in, and now you're a group again. The same old jokes from 10 years ago are still funny to us to this day, and the same mannerisms that each guy brings to the table that you joke about, they still have those. So, yeah, it definitely brings back a lot of memories and even get to create new ones, get to play in a game like that.
Yeah, for sure. Like, there's guys that you probably didn't know, too, obviously, right? So it was cool. I think it was Rob Quitt. Did he play with you guys?
Yeah.
Because I talked to him, and he said it was just cool to play with some other guys I didn't really know or, kind of watch when he was a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's cool, man. So we'll kind of transition into your further playing career after the Spitfires. From there, you were drafted to the Philadelphia Flyers and jumped into the AHL. Was there a big transition between the O and the Jungle?
There definitely was. And I think the biggest aspect is it became more of a business at that point. You
really?
Had players on your team that are, 32, 35 years old, families, kids. That aspect, and for them, it doesn't become as much of as a bond, because ultimately everybody's goal at that point is to make the NHL. So your teammates are your competitors, you know, and there's a big difference in pay too. For instance, typically if you make 10 times more, literally 10 times more 1 week playing in the NHL versus you do in the American League. So there was a lot of more of a dog-eat-dog type of mentality there. Not to say that I didn't forge friendships, which I did, and I was fortunate enough to have great teammates, but it was just a different dynamic in the sense that in the OHL, everybody was growing together and pushing each other in a positive manner, where in the AHL, it's more, you know, it's not, everybody does push each other and everybody are teammates, so I don't want to say that everybody's trying to screw each other, because it's not like that. But yeah, there is definitely an aspect of competitiveness amongst each other, because, like I said, the difference is 10 times more in your pay, 10 times more in your, you know, probably career earnings. So there's a lot more of a, I guess you would just say competitiveness really sums it up.
Absolutely. I know what you're saying. Like, I don't know if you've seen it on Netflix. There's this documentary, Ice Guardians. Fantastic documentary.
You're familiar with it? A bunch of my buddies told me to watch it.
It really is actually very good for anyone that's listening to this also. It's unbelievable. But one aspect that they touched upon was the AHL and how the documentary centers on enforcers, right? So it's a lot about them when they're in the AHL making a name for themselves. So like you're saying, like they don't want to hurt each other, but they kind of want to hurt each other to move up to the next level, right?
Right, exactly. And like I said, it's not like the OHL where these are 16, 20-year-old kids trying to make a living. These are, you know, 25 to 30-year-old men that have families that they have to provide for, and they don't have something to fall back on. You know, they're not going to school or get a job right out of, you know, hockey. So there's a lot of, you know, people are trying to make as much money as they can.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Just a different dynamic. You know, like one thing I noticed with just doing the show when I interview athletes, I always kind of talk about jumping from one level to another. So even like we were talking about when you were playing minorly and jump to the OHL, it's just a different transition, a different dynamic, right? Now you're playing with some bigger and stronger guys and so forth. When you go to the AHL, you're playing with even older guys, right? There's no age gap.
Exactly. Cool. Exactly.
Okay. So of course, from there, you did play in the NHL quite a lot, actually, in the 2011-2012 season. Was that experience everything that it's made out to be? I talked to Mark Andari about his experience there, and he said you can't take it away from him. It doesn't matter what he did, how long he did it for, he was there. So is that very memorable to you?
Oh, definitely. And to be honest, now in my life, it seems like it was such an eternity ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't really reminisce about it until I'll have somebody that, you know, may have met me for the first time, or, you know, I was just interested in the hockey life outside of the rink, and that's when I really get to think about my time that I had. And when I do, I look back on it with gratitude and gratefulness that I was able to have that opportunity to play at that level, because I think when you start to play, you always dream about doing it, but to actually get the opportunity to do it, I'll never forget my very first shift. It was something very surreal. It was playing on a line with Mike Richards, and we were the second line to go out for the game. So we called our game. He called our number, the coach, and I remember just all of a sudden going, "Holy crap, this is actually real now!" And I started shaking a bit. So this one thing that, like Mark says, I'm with him, and I think I'm with even a guy like Sidney Crosby, even though he's the greatest, one of the greatest ever play. I think every time he steps on the ice, I'm sure he has a sense of awe and the nostalgia of the league and just the ability to play with some of the players that you get to play with and even against.
Mm-hmm. And not everybody gets to do that, right? Even some people that maybe think deserve it or should be there don't always get that opportunity.
Yeah, and that's something that I've always told the players that I've coached now, is that there are so many good players that get to play the game, but there's very few that get to play it at the highest level, even if there are some guys that have the ability to, you know, there does seem to be a sense of, I don't want to say luck, but you do definitely need some good opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, you're grateful and gratitude for the opportunity, right? So looking back on it, that might be how you see it.
Exactly.
Cool. So let's talk about your coaching career now and how you eventually got there. So you suffered a pretty nasty injury in your playing career and decided to step away from the ice. And did you decide to get on the bench right away, or did it take some time between deciding to retire and jumping into coaching?
Yeah, when it first happened, I had a full year of recovery. I didn't know, you know, halfway through my recovery if I was able to play or not. So I wasn't really thinking about the next step other than just trying to get healthy. And I still had a dream of getting back on the ice.
100%, yeah.
Once it got closer to the end of my recovery, and we could see that the progress, although from a normal standpoint, was outstanding, where the sense where I, at the beginning, I only had a 70% chance of walking again. You know, now I was able to skate and I was able to work out, but just not to the level that is required to play at the highest level in hockey. So I had to make the ultimate decision to retire. And when I made that decision, I can't say that I had a plan necessarily of what I was going to do next. I think your entire life revolves around hockey, and you need that in order to make it to the highest level. You need to have full commitment. And for me personally, I didn't take post-secondary education. Reason being, I always told my teacher, they said, school's always going to be there, and I'll go to school if I need to. I don't know if that's the right attitude to have. I think it's a bit of a risk to have. I don't know if I'd want my children to have that type of mentality. But I did have a full belief in my ability to make it there. But oddly enough, the reason or the how I got into coaching was I just went to Johnny Schott here in Tecumseh just randomly. I saw DJ Smith. He was just having his last beer, and him and I got to talking, and he was looking for a coach. I said I'd be interested, and that's how it happened.
That's crazy. It's funny how these things come to be sometimes, man.
Yeah, it always seems to be in a way that it's so unexpected. It just seems to be the journey of life.
And that was in Oshawa?
Yeah, that was...
Or, recruited to Oshawa?
Right.
Yeah, because that was my next question, was how did you end up on Oshawa?
Yeah, so that's how.
That's funny.
Random event. I don't know if DJ had a plan before, and he was going to just ask me later or what.
Yeah, he was just waiting for you at Johnny Schott's. That's all. Those guys are always hanging
just
there, too.
Just random, yeah.
That's funny. We had your time with the Generals there. And was that your, a first official, kind of coaching experience? Or maybe did you kind of, run some camps and do some other stuff with the Spits before that? Or is this, totally new to you?
Ran any camps. I never did anything like that. While I was rehabbing, because it was such a serious injury, Flyers allowed me to rehab here in Windsor. I had a very good therapist here, and I was helping out the Spitfires, actually. So they would allow me to practice with the team, but at the same time, I was going to all the games, even on the road. I'd watch the video with them, and so I started to get my feet wet in that aspect. I wasn't doing it because I wanted to go into coaching the following year. It wasn't a plan. It was just something that, you know, I felt that they were giving me the opportunity to practice in ice time, and I thought I would just pay my dues by helping them out with, you know, anything that I could help out with and whatever they needed. So that was my only experience prior to going to Oshawa.
Cool. That's pretty interesting, because from there you've kind of excelled and obviously got to where you are now. We'll talk about that in a few moments. But you spent some time with Flint. Was that decision kind of made to be a little closer to home, and how was it out there with a new team?
To be honest, I wasn't looking to leave Oshawa all that hastily. I just purchased a house the year prior, moved all in. I wouldn't say settling, because in coaching you never get to settle, it seems. Even if you signed a 20-year contract, you could be gone next year.
Just like a player, too.
Exactly. It's hard to plan for. What had happened is, because the OHL had taken over that team, Dave Branch called me one May afternoon in inquiring if I would be interested in taking, in a sense, a promotion, because your title goes from assistant to associate. At the same time, you would have the opportunity to take a team that, you know, is brand new, but just went through something that, you know, you hope that players never have to go through, or even coaching staff or even the management have to go through. So I went and did the interview process with them. It seemed fairly clear that I was the only one going for that job, and if I wanted it, it was mine. At that time, my goal was to move on to the NHL as quickly as possible in coaching. So I thought it was the next step. I ended up taking that job.
Cool, man. And obviously what's going on with the city there too, it's kind of good to be able to give the people of Flint something to go and do, really, right?
No, exactly. You see it on TV, but you don't really get to see the real impact of events like that unless you live in that area.
Exactly.
And I would say, unfortunately, I had the opportunity to see the the detriment that it caused that city and the amount of people that were out of water, and such an essential.
Of course, yeah, for real.
And to see people struggling just with water is something that, again, now that I come home and I can go to the faucet and have a glass of water whenever I want, without having any worries, you just take for granted that for the most part in your daily life. But when you get to see something like what happened in Flint, unfortunate water crisis, now you don't take for granted your water all that much.
Yeah, it's just the simple things, right?
Yeah.
All right, so like we had touched upon a little bit before, now you are one of the assistant coaches for the University of Windsor Lancers. How did that opportunity come to be, and what are you anticipating?
Yeah, again, it was fun. Similar to seems to be all the coaching jobs I've had. There's a story to them without me applying or anything. But Kevin Hamlin knew that I was setting some roots here. My girlfriend and I had just purchased a house near the WFCU, and we're going to be staying in this area for the foreseeable future. And I think that he just gave me a call and just asked if I would be interested in getting back into coaching. And, it's something that I thought it seemed a different challenge and something that's going to hopefully make me an all-around better coach.
Absolutely, man. So just to kind of talk about the OUA hockey, are you kind of an advocate for that level of hockey? Because people don't realize how competitive it really is.
Well, yeah, I think that's why, one of the reasons why I took this job. To be honest, I had offered prior for the season before with different organizations and in lesser leagues and even AAA and whatnot, but I wasn't too interested in that because I wanted some competitiveness in my life. And it's not to say that AAA isn't. I just didn't really feel like dealing with the parents all that much, or just
the
aspect of it. Like kids still haven't made their decision what they want to do in life, right? They're too young. They don't know if they want to be a hockey player. They don't know if they want to go to school, whatever. Mm-hmm. I just didn't want to have to deal with that dynamic. And this opportunity in this league, like you said, there's people that I think overlook the league, but there's some very good hockey players in the OUA. And I think one thing that I see is CHL players that played in the CHL, and now they come to this league, all of a sudden get a reality check that you didn't drop down a league, you moved up a league.
Absolutely.
And it's something that I'm looking forward to, the opportunity to grow those players.
That's sick, man. Like I had kind of mentioned before, is just the transition to a different level. Now, again, these kids aren't playing with just kids. So you can be anywhere from 19 to 30 in that league too, right?
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. You get to deal for me personally, I get to deal with men in the aspect of I don't have to worry about billets, or I don't have to worry about curfew, things like that. They're on their own. They get to make their own decisions. And if they want to make the right decision, I'm not going to force them to. I just hope by my leadership that they will.
Absolutely, man. Like, there's a lot of responsibility on those guys solely. And like you had mentioned before, actually, it was one thing I was going to touch upon, is that a lot of CHL players move into college or university. So I'm sure having your presence there will really translate to these players, rather if they had played junior or not.
Yeah, I hope so. I think so. I think a lot of players that come from the CHL and now they move on to the OUA, they come with a chip on their shoulder, or they come pissed off and they may think that their career's over, and they're mad because they didn't get perhaps the ice time in the CHL or the opportunity or whatever the excuses may be. But I do seem to find that CHL players have more excuses than the players that played, Junior B or Junior A somewhere in Toronto, where they're still trying to develop. And I hope that with my presence that they don't feel like it's over, because I'm coaching this league, and I had the opportunity to coach in quotations higher leagues with CYHL or CHL, but I ended up choosing this, and I hope that these players will continue their growth as players and individuals.
Absolutely, you could kind of be in the same boat as them.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly.
Very
so
interesting.
Hopefully, there's a good dynamic there and a good relationship that I get to forge with these players, and they get to become, you know, like I said, better hockey players and better men.
Absolutely, I can agree with that. And just to begin, wrap things up, wasn't really going to touch upon it, but yeah, briefly kind of mentioned making it to the NHL. Is that still a goal for you as a coach, obviously?
I'm not sure. I still don't know if I'm good enough or not yet as a coach. I think mm-hmm. I'm still learning more about myself than worrying about moving on. Mm-hmm. I think, and I don't know if it's the right choice or not,
okay.
But right now I'm just more focused on rounding myself out as an individual and becoming a better leader than focusing on goals like becoming an NHL coach. I think mm-hmm. I would want it to happen organically, or I want to be in a place where I can say with confidence that yes, I can coach that at that level. And right now I don't think I'm at that level. I don't even know if I can get there. I think it's just going to be in our, like I said, it's something that's just going to organically happen. Mm-hmm. And if it does, it does. If it doesn't, I've been grateful for the opportunities that I've had to coach at the level that I've already coached at.
Awesome, man. So obviously it's not something that's going to hurt you if you don't make it there, which is a great mentality to have. It seems like you're in a perfect spot given your story and, like I said, just the mentality that you have right now. So thank you again for taking the time to do this, and I'm looking forward to the season to see you behind the bench.
Yeah, no, thanks. It was my pleasure, and I'm looking forward to it as well.
Hey, if you're just tuning in, my name is Drake DeMore, and you're listening to Wind City Sports on CJAM 99.1 FM. We are now reaching higher ground in Windsor, Detroit. This is Windsor's only local sports radio program and podcast. We just heard from former Windsor Spitfire and former NHLer Eric Wellworth. If you're listening on the radio and you missed part of that interview, you'll be able to listen to it in a few minutes on SoundCloud, iTunes, wherever podcasts are found, and on Friday it'll be dropping on YouTube. Now we're going to break down some local sports news here on the podcast, kicking things off with our Windsor Clippers Junior B lacrosse team. The Clippers are coming off yet another big win over the Wallaceburg Red Devils. 15-13 was the final score. Chase Kavanaugh put up 5 goals and 2 assists for a total of 7 points. James Morgan with 2 goals and an assist for 3. Braden Maye continues to run train on these teams here with 3 goals and 4 assists, totaling 7 points. Noah Bushnell with 2 goals and 4 assists to assist the Clippers in that victory. Maya continues to lead the league with 71 points. Behind him is Chase Kavanaugh, also from the Clippers, at 65. Noah Bushnell sits at 5th in the entire league with 54. Maya is still leading, or actually sorry, he's tied with Wallaceburg's Kyle Dawson for 39 goals. And just below them with 29 is Chase Kavanaugh. Noah Bushnell is leading the league by 1 assist still right now at 44. Nowhere in the leaderboard are any Windsor players for penalty minutes. Windsor and Wallaceburg are actually tied at 20 points apiece in the Far West Division. They're actually in action right now against the London Blue Devils over at Forest Glade Arena. The game time was set for 8 p.m. Then they have another week off, and they'll be playing again at Forest Glade Arena at 8 p.m. next Thursday, June 7th, against the Point Edward Pacers. Quite a rivalry between the two, but Windsor is just best for them every single time. Pacers only won 2 games so far this year, but 1 did go to OT with the Clippers. So it should be some good action over at Forest Glade Arena. Come on out and support. Cheap and fun and exciting. Our Windsor's TFC soccer team is returning to the alumni field for the first time since May 19th, earlier this month. They will be playing in League Cup draw action against the TFC 3 at 4 p.m. at Alumni Field. From there, next week, they will be on the road in Oakville against the Blue Devils. Following that, Vaughn will visit them here at Alumni Field on June 10th at 4 p.m. to take on the TFC. And our Windsor Rogues Rugby Club returns to the field for the first time since the Rose City International Tournament back at the beginning of the month. They had their first game of the regular season just about 2 weeks ago against the Niagara Wasp out in Niagara Falls there. They traveled up to an 80-0 defeat as they lost to Niagara back on May 12th, and now we are anticipating their next game. This Saturday, May 26th, we have Senior Men's B Division action at 1:30 p.m. and Senior Men's A at 3 p.m. They will be taking on the Highland Rugby Club of Fergus. That's going to be all for this week on Wind City Sports. We're here on CJAM with new episodes live at 8 p.m. every Thursday and replays at 12 noon. You can hear every single old episode of Wind City Sports, including this one, on SoundCloud, iTunes, and wherever podcasts are found. We have a few select interviews up on YouTube. And of course, we also have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram account. Search us up. You should easily be able to find us. We'll be back here next week on CJAM and on the podcast with Border City Wrestling's Aiden Prince. So until then, smell you later.